You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 12th of May 2017 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. We are of course live again once again tonight. We've got the software fixed and we also have Dennis with us once again. Mr. Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told and Communism by the Back Door. And now, finally, a new documentary series. Dennis, how are you doing today on this fine summer's evening?
Well, I've just remembered how difficult it is to do them documentaries because I'm a bit knackered at the moment, but hopefully you'll drag me through this particular episode. But I've been working on part one pretty intensely past 24 hours, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, I feel very privileged, Dennis. The first viewer of the premiere showing of the test episode of the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, and I was really impressed. It's fantastic. It definitely has more of a feel of The Greatest Story Never Told, more than Communism by the Back Door, but it's definitely a sense of continuity there with the other two. And I think I get a sense of what you're going to be trying to show with this series as well. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the bits right at the beginning is talking about how Winston Churchill, the way that he phrased this communist attack, this worldwide conspiracy to take over the revolutions, he called it a conspiracy to overthrow civilization. When in reality, it was a conspiracy to overthrow Christianity. Is that sort of going to be the theme for the series?
Well, you can't put yourself in their shoes, to be honest, because Churchill was a Freemason and obviously a pretty elite Freemason. So he would have known much of what was going on, if not everything. And so, he, you know, to come out with a line to talk about the overthrow of civilization when he would have known it was the overthrow of Christianity. Yet, if he had come out and said that, then possibly, you know, dots could have been joined. And because this has been going on for centuries. I mean, it's actually been an incredible bit of a journey this past couple of weeks, looking at the research and just seeing the absolute lies and cover-up and, you know, but everything falls into place once you connect with this overthrow of Christianity, this killing of the culture of the white race in Europe and around the world. And obviously the ultimate aim is a Jewish utopia with no God or with their own God.
And with no white people or enslaved white people, at least. One of the other bits that struck me at the beginning there was how Winston Churchill did seem to have a grasp of what was going on. He said about this worldwide conspiracy. He talked of envious malevolence, which is what we see today. Everything is about envy. It's all the politics of envy. It's all about how we should be taxing the rich more. We should be taking from them over there. Aren't you jealous of him? He's got far more money than you. Instead of thinking, well, hang on a minute, it's not that I should have his money. It's that we should be more well off. We don't need to be taking it from the people at the top to make them as poor as we are. We want the poorer people to be raised up. And this was before he'd been bailed out by the Jews as well. What date was it when he got this quote? 20, what date was it? 1920.
Sorry. Yeah, around about that time. Yeah, I think it was. So somebody said that he could have picked it up from Mein Kampf. But like I said, I think he would have already known the situation because he was a Mason, he was a Druid, he's high ranking, you know, his family are elite. So there'd be no reason for him not to know.
I think his views must have changed because he certainly became a part of this worldwide conspiracy to overthrow Christianity, overthrow civilization. He became a pivotal part in it alongside Roosevelt and Stalin. He played just as important a part, didn't he? He's allied with Stalin. He's talking about the Bolshevik Revolution and where it's going to lead to, and then he allies Britain with the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, and in this particular series, I do a little bit on the Bolsheviks, and we see just what a group of psychopaths have got together and taken over a country. And when I mean psychopaths, we are talking psychopaths. I mean, there's no end to their, you know, the massacres and their atrocities and the lust for blood. And yet we allied with them and we knew what they were about, because in Communism by the Back Door, when we found the letter which was sent to, you know, the BBC and the clergy of Britain warning about what the Bolsheviks are going to do, because we know what they did in Poland in one of the 1920 eruptions of Europe. I mean, there was revolutions going on all over the place.
Well, I think you clearly show that in this first episode. You list all of these ones since the French Revolution, and then you seem to concentrate on the Bolshevik uprising, as you were saying, and a little bit on Bela Kun as well in Hungary. And this seems to be sort of setting the scene for what happened in World War Two. And when you showed these Bolsheviks, it shows you the Romanovs, and just looking at the Romanovs' faces, it's like they're just calling out to be avenged, as if they're saying, avenge me, get the people that did this to me. When you see those children's faces, and I didn't realise that 18 Romanovs in all were killed.
And there are some still around. I think there's some in America. In fact, I think one got in touch with me many, many years ago when I wasn't really clued up enough on the subject to understand, you know, that side of it. I mean, the Russian Revolution in itself is an experience to learn about. So they are still around, but obviously, you know, I didn't know the full impact of, you know, what happened to the Romanovs. But you know, like I said, Bela Kun was a new one on me, by the way. I mean, he was only in office for 3 months and yet massacred 10,000 Christians. I mean, complete psychopath. We think, you know, obviously, Stalin is the king. He's yet to come on the scene, you know. But I mean, at the moment, we've got Lenin and Trotsky who are actually going to be battling out for the, you know, the greatest mass killer of all time shortly.
And was Bela Kun put in office? I mean, did his revolution in Hungary take place before the Bolsheviks or after the Bolshevik revolution in Russia?
I'm pretty sure it was after, because it was called the Hungarian Soviet Republic, something like that.
So that was the first attempt to export what had happened in Soviet Russia to the rest of Europe. And after Hungary, there was obviously the one that happened in Germany, the short-lived communist regime.
Were there not one, you know what I mean? I mean, us as an island, you know, don't get the full impact of being on a continent with suddenly the Soviet Union as a communist psychopath country, which everyone is well aware at some point they're going to be facing. I mean, we've got this bit of sea in between us and mainland Europe, but it just doesn't connect. And in many ways, we're not even told of a lot of things. But when you look at what was facing Germany at that time, when the Versailles Treaty had them over a barrel with only 100,000 army, I mean, you know, it's like Hitler once said, when does a fox ever walk past a defenceless chicken?
He had to be rearmed. And you show a clip there as well where the Catholic Church is praising this and saying Germany needs to be rearmed and Hitler will save humanity from the Jews, is one of these quotes from a Catholic newspaper. The Catholics back then, they were traditional. They spoke out against the Jews. They supported what the National Socialists were doing. It wasn't until the end of the war that they changed. And even then, they were still helping the National Socialists. They were helping them to escape Europe and to escape to South America, and particularly the Jesuits. And we know the Jesuits get a hard time, especially from the conspiracy theorists, but the Jesuits were involved a lot in moving out the German National Socialists and the other Waffen-SS and getting them to South America, which I only discovered that recently. But there seems to be a lot of negative publicity, a lot of negative propaganda, particularly against Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, well, there is. I mean, the problem is it has been infiltrated several times. And this particular last time, over the period of nearly 70 years, just over 70 years, they've been dragged down because of Freemasonry. I mean, the popes are openly Freemason since Vatican II. You know, they've been dragged down into the debauchery, which is usually associated with Freemasonry. I mean, you've got paedophilia, you've got, you know, rumours of occult happenings and all this. This is all because of the infiltration of communists and Freemasons, who won't change the ways in any way just because they've infiltrated the Catholic Church. I mean, they are what they are, you know. And at the end of the day, no pope since Vatican II has ever criticised communism or condemned it.
Well, I think we're all agreed that the church has been taken over. But the reason for them wanting to do that, I think a large part of it is that you had that organisational structure there, and it was dedicated to natural law and biblical law and promoting Christ's commandments. It was dedicated to uplifting people's morals and uplifting people and encouraging them to reach higher. And getting them to stick to moral laws. And you had this structure that even if people didn't subscribe to it, it was just inferred that you had to be married before you had sex. You couldn't have children out of wedlock, and you couldn't have abortions. You must have as many children as possible. All these really positive things, no homosexuality, no race mixing, all these things that the church was promoting, and it was promoting that in every country that it was in. And you had this structure. And I see the New World Order as being the opposite of that. And the Jews want to promote the opposite of all of that. And they had to take out this big structure, first of all, before they could then start implementing the New World Order that we see all around us today. They had to take the church out, first of all, I think. And the Catholic, church, being the biggest one, that was the one they had to take out.
Yeah, but they wouldn't do it overnight. It's just been a slow process of gradual changings. Even the laws of Vatican II are not strictly, you know, doctrines would have been changed or new laws. It's the ambiguity they've given these laws which allows them to, you know, give your own slant on it, if you like. And these Freemasons are now coming out where, you know, oh, it's okay to be an atheist. You know, you can still get to heaven, and homosexuality is fine. It's, you know, everything that the Catholic Church was against up to 1945, particularly that 12-year period when Hitler was in Europe, this was a time when the Catholic Church was being protected. I mean, it was obviously under the Rothschilds after World War One. So it was only when you can follow the path of the church and Europe, because after World War One, once Hitler had gone around Europe and replaced all the Rothschild governments, if you like, with Christians. I'm sorry to say that these people who don't like Christianity, who feel that Christianity is a problem, that it's quite obvious when you research that the Catholic Church were being protected by Hitler. Hitler was a Catholic, always remained a Catholic. Germany was a Christian country. Russia was a Christian country before it fell under the Bolsheviks. And so it all ties in on this fanatical trip that these Jews have been on over the centuries. It can only come from religion. That fanaticism, this will to wipe out the white race, because once, if that succeeds and they take out the European white race, then there's no doubt the rest of the world falls in line.
I think up until that time, we had had corrupt people in the church. Don't get me wrong; there had been corrupt people. There'd been corrupt popes, corrupt priests, but it wasn't right at the very top. They didn't actually get to change doctrine. The structure of the church, the framework, the moral teaching remained the same. And since Vatican II, that has all changed. And I think during this war, the Catholic Church could see that it was Hitler that was standing against this godless Bolshevism. Bolshevism had attacked Russia. They'd killed all these Orthodox priests and they'd taken over Moscow. Moscow was the third Rome. Moscow was the center of the Orthodox Church. And if you take out the Orthodox Church, that takes out the whole of the Eastern side of Christianity. And the only side that's left is the Western side. And that's what they were hoping to do by taking out Hitler. By Hitler fighting against them, he was protecting the Western side of Christianity, the Catholic Church.
Correct. Yeah, and these people, these pagans, and whatever, you've got to understand that once this is understood, because it has been covered up. I mean, there's a short clip in it where Hitler is giving a speech and it gives the correct translation, and it's followed then by a piece of the same speech in this pro-Jewish documentary where it's been totally, the translation has been totally overhauled, and it's actually sounding and looking anti-Christian, which is proof that what they don't want people to know, that the World War II was actually the Holy War, which the Jews declared. They don't want that to be known, because obviously if a lot of Christians died on the side of the Allies, and if they'd have only known what the leadership really was, or who the leadership was, what they stood for, would never have fought for them.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned that, this Holy War that the Jews declared. What bit is it that you're referring to there? Is that where they declared war, Judea declares war on Germany, or is it another?
Well, yeah, I'm talking about after Germany, Hitler had removed all the bankers and the Jews and everyone from all these communists from certain positions of power. The Jews then obviously have lost a certain amount of income from a country, because obviously Germany's going to pick up pretty rapid now, because all the money's going to go to a good use, and it's going to go to, you know, the people of that country. Where before, as in all other countries today, it was straight into the back pocket of Israel or the Jews. So consequently, they had a meeting, a Jewish Congress meeting, and they decided what we're going to do, and they decided to say, well, let's give Germany an ultimatum. And they said to Germany, you get rid of Hitler and reinstate every single communist and every single Jew, or we will declare war on you. And obviously, Jeremy Chairman said, you know, it ain't going to happen. And so Samuel Untermeyer, who was the American delegate leader, went back to America and on live over the air, you can get the transcript of the speech on Google, where he openly declares war, a holy war, on Germany, hoping that the rest of the world will stand by the Jews and hopefully starve the Germans into submission. Because as everybody knows, although sanctions are thrown around a lot these days, to sanction a country is actually an act of war. And it certainly was in them days. And so the blockade, the worldwide blockade, went up against Germany. All the Jews around the world were influencing people to stop buying German goods, hoping that Hitler would be forced to step down.
I think that didn't they call that part of it the phony war as well, because there weren't really any shots fired. It was just a question of trying to choke Germany so that nothing could get in and nothing could get out.
I mean, you call it phony war also when Britain and France declared war on Germany. Nothing really happened for about 7 or 8 months. So that was associated with that as well. But yeah, I mean, just one newspaper article, I think it was Daily Express, printed the headline, Judea declares war on Germany. And again, you can find that up on the internet. And the significance of it is that Holy War, they're still wanting to wipe out the Christians, still look to Germany as a Christian country.
Obviously, that's what they're against is Christianity. I mean, it's the churches and the Christians that they attacked as soon as they took over those countries. As soon as they took over Hungary, as soon as they took over Russia. And another bit that I noticed from this, you make reference to Western Freemasonry and Eastern Communism. And it would seem that Freemasonry was their connection. That was the connection between the East and the communists in the East with the people in the West to get the people in Britain to form this alliance with Russia. And it seems
with
to be
a bunch of psychopaths.
This Freemasonry is the link that goes right the way through it. You also highlighted Alexander Kerensky, the Grand Master of the Russian Lodge, and he gets put in place as the first Prime Minister, the first Bolshevik Prime Minister.
What happens is that Freemasonry plays a big part in this again, because Benaiah Brith from the West. That Jewish organization, which still claims they're not a lodge, but really they are a lodge, they tried on several occasions after World War I to break into Russia and to take down the Tsar, but it failed each time. But, you know, they're always going to come back again. And Schiff's got extra funding now. And now they've got more revolutionaries, and they've got Trotsky, and they've got Lenin. And so what the plan was this time was for the Freemasons in Russia to take over the Russian government temporarily until the Bolsheviks arrived, and then hand over power. And that's exactly what happened. Because when you see the footage of this palace being stormed, as it says in the documentary, there's one broken window and one scratch of paint. That was all a farce. Power was handed over to Lenin, and it was only later that the white armies in the south got wise of what was going on, and the Christian White Army went to war against the atheist communists.
Would that be the White Russians?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought as much. And this guy Alexander Kerensky, how did he fit into it then?
Sorry,
he was the grandmaster of the Russian Lodge, wasn't he?
Yeah, because this Russian Lodge was all in on this particular plan. And what the plan was, they managed to get the Tsar to resign by threatening his family with death, and his brother actually took over for a day. And then he resigned because he felt the heat from these psychopaths. And so consequently, once he resigned, they took over the reins of government, held on to him. And so nobody actually knows what's going on. Only these people are supposed to be this legal government. Once the Bolsheviks arrive, Trotsky arrives, they pass the power over. Now, most people in the documentary think that the power was taken from this Alexander, and then he was banished. No, he handed the power over and he went back to his lodge, because in 1916 he'd been appointed the Grand Master of that particular lodge, which was involved in the overthrow of Nicholas.
So his reward was to be promoted within Freemasonry, and it was the Grand Russian Lodge that was working with the B'nai B'rith in America in order to pull this off. And once the fake revolution had occurred with only one broken window and a damaged wallpaper, they sent Lenin over to be installed as the Grand Dictator or whatever it was that Lenin was. It was all planned from the very beginning, and this is all leading on from the previous revolutions before that, isn't it? The French Revolution.
That's right. Yeah, the French Revolution were the same people, different century. Lenin actually started his purge of Christianity. It took over in 1917, late 1917. By summertime of 1918, they started to rip up the churches, kill the priests, close down Christianity, and imprison, send to the gulag, what they do best, you know.
Yeah, well, we see some of this in the footage there in the documentary as well, don't we, where they're smashing the churches, destroying the churches.
Yeah, I managed to get all of some of that footage. Yeah, I mean, the quality's not brilliant, but what can you do?
Well, this continued as well. I mean, when they went into the Baltic states, Latvia and Lithuania, and much later on, destroyed the churches there. The ones that they didn't destroy, they turned into cinemas and science museums. And all the while they were doing this, they left all the synagogues standing. Like, they even improved the synagogues. They well, went and worked to improve them.
Religion, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Religion has been so dumbed down now in the West that, you know, it's hardly worth a mention to a lot of people. But you've got to take it in the text of that time, because, you know, it was valuable to people in that time. Christianity was valuable to a lot of Germans. Hitler's mother was a devout Catholic. So these are times when these people really believed devoutly. So you've got to set your mindset in that time, and every time they go into a country, these psychopaths, they go straight for Christianity. Now, when these pagans and these Jews, whatever, you know, say to me, Christianity, it's a Jewish religion, blah, 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 you know, Sven, and I know, Sven, that the one person they hate more than anybody, more than Hitler, is Jesus.
Oh, yes.
And then it all falls into place.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we know this, and it must have seemed the same to the people back then. I mean, this is what they must have felt in Germany. They could hear what was happening in Russia, that these priests had all been attacked. And this is why these people joined the Waffen-SS. This is why they were so devout Christians, like Leon de Grel, like the characters from Schmidt's Axis War Heroes series. Every one of them talks about their Christian faith.
That's right.
It
swept under the carpet, and a lot of people refuse to. I mean, I know there's a lot in America don't see where the Christianity from Europe is going, but it doesn't really matter because what they believed at that time was such strong, and it is in many parts of Europe. It still is, but like I said, it's been so. I mean, the Catholic Church has been so demonized and decadent, and a priest which wants to have all the respect in the world no longer has that respect, and rightfully so, because they're not really priests. These are admitted communists and Freemasons.
Well, I think a lot of these embellishments, we see them in Hollywood. We certainly see them in the clip at the end of this episode, where it shows you Adolf Hitler's speech, and he's talking about providence, raising the nation, morality, strength, self-discipline, and then it shows you the Hollywood translation, and he's saying the Ten Commandments are no more, there's no need for morality, Christianity gave birth to Bolshevism, all this nonsense, that we are used to hearing people that don't really understand Christianity say, and this is a Jewish production which is saying this, and I think these embellishments, they don't just appear in the Hollywood documentaries, but there's a lot of stuff that's been put out there that's supposedly original SS documents, which are, funnily enough, they're actually in English. And they mention all this sort of stuff in there. Now, last week I did these narrations from this SS Dutchman, and I'm certain that the guy that wrote up the recordings, because he must have recorded his memoirs, and I'm certain that the guy that actually wrote up those memoirs thought he would add a few anti-Christian bits in there to appeal to the readers, because people are so anti-Christian nowadays, they want to hear that. So, and I think it's almost, it has worked its way into supposedly National Socialist documents and books. And I don't want to cast aspersions on that book, that narration.
No, because it's place. I mean, 99%
of it's accurate, I think. But it's just
The red flag to me is YouTube, because I can download 100 occult Hitler SS videos tomorrow. There's a reason why I can do that, because they want me to watch it.
It appeals to people, and they know the target audience that they want it to appeal to. But it's not just people deliberately doing that. I think there are other people that just think, well, I'll add a few bits in there because that will appeal to the reader, not realizing that it's actually untrue. And when you look at the information that you've dug up, Dennis, especially that you put in this episode, I mean, that just shows it. It's in black and white. You can't argue against that.
You can't argue it, no. No, I mean, you wouldn't believe that the amount of flack I got over the final episode of The Greatest Story Never Told, when I put the quote in from Franco. And Franco goes on to say that, that he was a fighter for Christianity. God gives him, the wreath of the victor. And I'm getting emails saying, what's going on? Hitler wasn't into Christianity and all this. But this is Franco, another leader of a Catholic country, who would have fought alongside Hitler if the Civil War had devastated the country in 1939 and just finished, just as Germany were going into war. I mean, they sent volunteers, but this is... Now, I've also got a letter from Magda Goebbels, the final letter that she sent out to one of her, I think it were a cousin or something like that. I've got the letter, and in the letter, she's talking about holiness and God, and you can't hide it. It's there. It's always been there, but they've always tried to bury it.
Well, it's good that you're digging it up now, and we can see the truth now. I think they really can't have missed the fact that the first thing that the Bolsheviks did when they took over an area was kill all the priests. They didn't go out. They didn't go out and take out all the army. They didn't go and take out all the politicians. Yeah. The first thing they did was kill tens of thousands of priests. And this was this was revenge that they were taking, because a large portion of them were Jewish. They weren't Russian. They'd been shipped there from America, from Poland.
Yeah.
I think all the Jews just sort of headed for that area where they knew that there was going to be a communist coup, and they could then take out their vengeance on the Christians, and horrific tortures that they carried out on these Christians as well.
Total psychopaths.
A lot of them, they try and then project onto the Germans with the so-called hoax.
Exactly. But can I just say, Sven, is that what people have got to stop denying is that the actions speak louder than words. Like you just said, the first thing that the Bolsheviks did when they went into a country was head for the Christian church and kill as many Christian priests as possible. That happened in Mexico, that happened in Spain, that happened in every single place where there was a revolution. Now, they didn't go in there and shut down Freemasonry. The only one person shut down, or you know, the fascist regimes shut down Freemasonry. Now we know why. These are a fifth column for these guys. And so all this rubbish about, oh, Hitler wanted to know about the occult himself, didn't want anybody else, all these excuses, you've got to say, come on now, actions speak louder than words. He's the one that's going into the Soviet Union with five or six Christian countries. You know, he's the one that's standing up to these psychopathic morons, but being demonized because of that defeat. And right at the end, like they say, because he stood up to these all-time liars of history, he was always going to be the most demonized because he got beat.
Well, even the Catholics were speaking highly of him at the time. As I was saying, this newspaper article headline, Hitler will save humanity from the Jews. And the church itself, the Roman Catholic Church and the Pope, they spoke very highly of Hitler. There's another quote in there about how Hitler is going to raise up Germany and how he's, you know, he's blessed. Yeah. He's going to create this miracle for Germany. And
Christians don't want to know him now because of the stigma of the Holocaust and everything else what we've been thrown on top of him. So they've lost the track of it all.
Well, they've tried to replace Christ with his death on the cross and his victory over death with 6 million Jews being gassed and then disappearing completely.
I've lost count of how many people say to me, if he hadn't killed the Jews or if he'd have died before 1939, he would have been the greatest leader of all time. I'm sick and tired of hearing that, because everything after that was all made up anyway, because of that reason.
If you listen to the narrative that they say, it seems to be Hitler was okay, and then he suddenly went crazy and killed all these Jews. The amount of times I hear that, he suddenly went crazy. And this seems to be the official story, because this is what the politicians will say. This is what Ken Livingstone will say. And that's the official story. You're not doubting the Holocaust if you
Hollywood
say
version
he
as
suddenly
well,
went crazy.
From all angles.
Suddenly went crazy, killed all these people, and the Germans all went crazy too. And it must have been
every single one
brainwashing. Yeah, every one of them fought until the very end.
And that other line that I hate is when I'm in some kind of a debate on the internet, they'll say, but even the Germans say that he was evil. Well, they would do, because they don't know half the story anyway.
They don't realise that their ancestors bravely gave their lives to defend Western Europe from communism. If it wasn't for Operation Barbarossa, then Western Europe would have had the same fate as Russia.
Well, that was the biggest army the world had ever seen, which was massing on the border of Europe. Stalin had got God knows how many tanks and this huge offensive army, not used for defence. It's all you know. It was all for crashing straight into Europe, no doubt heading straight for Germany, which was preempted by Hitler and ignored by historians in the West, but obviously known in the East, in East Germany. They're quite amused, I believe, at the fact that the Western historians still won't mention it, whereas it's actual fact that Stalin was gathering his forces ready, the biggest ever seen in history, to invade.
Right, I think it's been shown from the archives as well, but it's not really known. It's the same as that Kachin massacre that's been found out that was carried out by the Soviets. The archives have been released, and yet to say that is to doubt the Holocaust, because that was part of the Nuremberg judgments, was to blame Germany for the Kachin massacre. So if you're in Germany now and you say, well, hang on a minute, the Kachin massacre was actually carried out by the Soviets and they've admitted to it, you're breaking the law. That's doubting the Holocaust.
And
do
you know why they did that massacre? I found out the reason.
Why's that?
Because they knew at some point that the war was going to be won. As it got to that stage, and they felt that if they took out 20,000 of the intelligentsia and the Christians, then when finally they move into Poland, life will be so much easier.
So that was preempted.
That was planned. That was preempted. Planned. Roosevelt knew about it. Churchill knew about it.
So that was preempting it. So they didn't have to carry out the massacre once they actually took over.
Well, they had a chance of blaming it on the Germans as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which I found evidence as well. I've always said Stalin would never waste the chance of using 6 million German uniforms or 3 million German uniforms. I have found there is evidence of Germans, Russian soldiers dressed as Germans massacring villages.
No, I think that happened quite a lot, didn't it?
Which I'll have to remember next time.
Yeah, I think that happened quite a lot, actually. They would dress up as Germans and carry out these atrocities, especially these partisans as well would get up to stuff like that. The partisans were the worst. You've got a country that's supposedly come to a truce with Germany, and yet at the same time, you've got the Allies funding all these terrorists to then go and attack the Germans, which is just going to make life all the worse for the innocent French or the innocent Dutch that want anything to do with these partisans. It's a terrible thing to do. If a country's come to an armistice to then go funding terrorists, it's, you can compare that to what's happened with Ireland. You've got an armistice in Ireland now, and it's the equivalent of America funding terrorists in the Republic of Ireland to go bombing and attacking Northern Ireland. Everybody would condemn that today. But when we look at World War II, they hold up the French resistance as heroes, the Dutch resistance as heroes. They were all partisans. They were all terrorists in countries that had come to a peace, come to an armistice agreement.
Yeah. Can I just mention something as well, which was in this particular episode, about the girls, the princesses of the of Nicholas, the family was taken prisoner, house arrest, and then they have one particular Jew who is there, was appointed their warden, and he goes on and states legally, whatever that means, that he was the one who shot point blank Nicholas, but then goes on to explain that he had to take undress one of the girls for whatever reason. And actually, we know what Bolsheviks do. You've got three princesses in a room, Christian princesses. It doesn't really take much imagination. And I do feel that they were brutally raped.
That happened a lot with the Russian girls at that time. There's I think it's maybe in The Jew as Criminal, the book that the National Socialists brought out that was documenting all these various crimes that Jews had got up to. And it was talking about that back then. And I believe there was also Nick Clegg's wife's grandmother or grandfather was involved in this as well. I've seen a report on this about how they would take over these rich houses that were owned by the aristocracy. And they would just take the house over, drink all the alcohol, and the Secret Service would use that for interrogations. And every night they would just bring in the girls from around and they'd just rape them and abuse them.
Yeah.
And then they would shoot them in the head. And the blood would literally just be running through the floors and out the house. And this is going on in Russia with Germany next to it, knowing that that's the fate of the rest of Europe if Germany doesn't do something about it. This is why you had the Waffen-SS. All the rest of them was to defend Western Europe from the same fate from happening. And at the same time, you've got Britain, allied with America, helping these savages against Germany.
And don't forget, this is after the speech of Churchill. You know, this war is, a fight for Christianity. Let's have a big laugh, huh?
Yeah, well, that two-faced rat. he speaks the truth at the beginning of that episode. He says about this great conspiracy or these revolutions that are taking place and what they're hoping to achieve. And then 10 years later, he's working for them. He's allied.
They're making
with
a
them.
Film, I believe, of Churchill. They probably felt that it's about time he's getting enough stick on the internet. But really, that's just... It's a person with such double standards. I mean, you wouldn't turn your back on him.
Even if you know nothing about the war and you know nothing about his perfidy, surely people can see that he lost us, the British Empire. We had the British Empire until we had Churchill. Thanks to Churchill, we lost the British Empire. Surely, even if you know nothing about the war, you should be able to see that. See that he was a traitor to Britain. He lost everything that we had just so that he could fight a war against our brothers in Germany. And what has the result of that war been? We're flooded with the Third World and we're all in debt to the banks.
Yeah, well, I actually saw a photograph on the internet the other day, and it showed a picture of two pictures, actually, side by side. One of Paris when the Germans occupied France, and they were there, sat there all having a drink and whatever. And then on the opposite side, it showed Paris today, which was like Somalia at its worst.
It's in
so
flames.
So you tell me who won that war.
Paris is in flames. France is done for. Poor French, they must be longing for Vichy France. I mean, we're told about how terrible these Quisling regimes were, Victor Quisling and Vichy France, how dreadful it was. If you look at the pictures and compare it to what's going on today in Europe, these countries that were occupied by the Germans, life was wonderful then. You didn't need to see police walking around with stab vests and guns and helmets. It wasn't a police state. It wasn't as if they were occupied by a foreign force. Nothing like Palestine with this Israeli occupying force. And once the Germans took over a place, they let the people govern themselves pretty much. All they wanted to deal with was partisans. Yeah, the Bolsheviks would take over. They would starve the whole country to death so that they had to eat one another.
I think Lenin said at one point that you won't feel the pain till you're going to have to eat, you know, human flesh. Which is exactly what happened in the Ukraine.
Well, and it didn't just happen once either. I think it happened two or three times in the Ukraine. They did that. All the grain was taken so that they could pay back the bankers. It was all started with this money from Jacob Schiff, which you show. The episode, sorry, it goes back to Jacob Schiff and then setting up the revolution and then what happens from then on, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I covered Schiff in Communism by the Back Door, but obviously he plays a big part in it. I mean, he actually invested $20 million, between 20 and 50, they reckon. Well, let's say, you know, say an average, you say 30 million, which was worth well over $1 billion today. But between the years of these first 3 or 4 years of that, of the Bolsheviks taking over Russia, 600 million gold bars worth of gold bullion was transferred. I forget the name of his company now, but it's a company in New York, which he owned, but wasn't under his name. And so he kind of like reaped the rewards 1,000 times over from that initial outlay.
Well, I'm sure they did. One of the things I did think was good about this was that you weren't actually going over any old ground. Because we know the story of World War II, and yet all of this is new.
Yeah, I'm over the moon with that because obviously I didn't want to keep repeating myself, even though we're in the same war, we're in the same area. You know, there is new information coming out. Fascinating. And I can't get it all in, to be honest, because, you know, I've only got these 15-minute segments and I've got to move on. I mean, like I said, there's Mexico, there's the Spain. Spain is another one which has gone under the massacres down there, and Hitler again stepped in and saved God knows how many priests. And flew Franco's army over from Africa, which was stranded. And unless the Luftwaffe had flown them over, Spain would have fallen. I mean, the communists in Madrid were massacring priests like no tomorrow.
Do you think you're going to get a chance to go into some of this, what happened in Mexico and what happened in Spain?
Yeah, I'm hoping to. This is, like I said, it is new ground for me as well. So I'm on a bit of a journey myself. It's not always pleasant.
When do you think people will get a chance to have a look at this one then? I know it's pretty much almost there. You've obviously got a few bits to do.
Right. I mean, I usually get a nice feeling of a flowing feeling when it's right. It's just, to me, it's just not quite right yet. But, you know, obviously it was good enough for you to take a look at it and so we could discuss it tonight. But I've got to emphasise that a lot of people out there will be disappointed to know that religion is the key to all this, and not just Christianity, the religion of the Luciferian religion, which we had a Dutch whistleblower banker on recently on YouTube, who openly talked about the lifestyle that he had, the wealth that he had, and then he was suddenly asked to visit these churches with nude women walking around, and he thought, hey, this is great, until the point came, because he had a conscience which he could put in a fridge, apparently. He no shame, he no conscience, whatever needed to be done to earn the money. He got a great reputation with these elites, but then suddenly he was presented with, it's about time he sacrificed a child. Was the breaking point.
Where was that? Where did that take place then?
Well, this is going to be the documentary as well, but this took place, I think it was about four weeks ago, and some people were saying that one of the most remarkable documents ever on YouTube, and it certainly was. I mean, the guy was on the verge of breaking down in tears. He obviously wasn't making it up, and he was talking about Luciferian, you know, he said some Catholic, some person, says, but there's mainly Luciferian. He says there's about 8,500 of these people who rule the world. These are the people with the mega books. And he worked for them, and because he'd no conscience, and he always did a great job, he always had high standing with them. But as soon as his conscience started, as it would, because obviously the last thing he wants to do is sacrifice a child, a baby, then it comes a danger to himself then, because they'll begin to realise he's not that dependable guy that always been there. And so eventually he's had to leave. He has whistleblowed to a point. He won't name names because he says that will be the end. But he was also shown and had some torture did to him to show him what would happen if he did name names. It's a fascinating interview. It's on YouTube. Some of it's obviously with subtitles, but you can get some of them have got a translator talking, which I've used for one of the episodes on the documentary. Fascinating interview.
Yeah, I think people, we've been taught not to believe in the devil. We don't believe in evil. And the idea that people in the banks, people in politicians could be involved in this Luciferianism and human sacrifice. It just seems, oh no, that couldn't possibly happen. So they can get away with it because people just don't believe that it goes on. So they can carry on right in front of our very noses, as it were, knowing that people just aren't going to believe the witnesses when they say this is what's going on.
Well, I've always said it's not what I believe, it's not what you believe, it's what they believe is the problem. And like I said, more and more, I'm hearing that name more and more, Luciferian.
Well, that Luciferian idea, that's the Enlightenment, isn't it? I mean, Lucifer is the light, the Enlightenment goes back to raising man up as a god, and man being told that he could be like one of the gods. That's this Enlightenment idea. Is suddenly we're enlightened. We no longer have to go along with these traditions. We no longer have to go along with the laws that our ancestors passed down to us, because we're enlightened now. We're superior. We are progressive. We are man elevated to the position of God, and we're descended from monkeys. That's the bit that really knocks the cart over, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've never got my head around that one, to be honest.
we're like gods, but we're descended from monkeys. You know. Well, it just contradicts itself, doesn't it?
Well, it does, yeah. But I mean, I did a piece actually on the Lucy's Trust, coming by the back door, when I had the people there talking openly about and Lucifer and all this kind of carry on, and they got offices in the United Nations, and you know, I wasn't making it up. These people were talking in an interview, but still, people were saying, "No. Listen, you can, you know, what's the old saying? You can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink."
Yeah, you seem to be getting a few distortion on your line there, Dennis. It's sort of cutting in and out a bit, and a lot of knocking noises. I don't know what's going on there. I just sort of missed that last bit of what you were saying. That Lucy's Trust. At the United Nations, they admit that's where it came from, was from Lucifer's Trust. They admit that's the idea they want to promote.
Well, it all comes from Alice Bailey and Blavatsky and all this. I mean, people saying that Hitler used to take Blavatsky's book to bed with him every night, which was garbage. He shut all Freemasonry down and all the occult societies. It's in London where they have the offices and New York where they have the offices. And the occult was opened up in Europe as soon as World War II ended. So it doesn't take a genius to know who's pushing it. And these people openly talk about the Antichrist, Maitreya, they have several names for him. And they're openly talking in an interview on a radio. And then I'm getting criticized for believing it. When they've got offices in the United Nations.
Well, just pushing the Enlightenment idea and these Enlightenment values, that is Luciferianism. That's one end of it. And at the other end of it, then you've got your human sacrifice and all of that side of it. But it works its way throughout the whole of society. This idea that there is no good and there is no evil, that means there is no discrimination between what is good and what is evil. And of course, that's what we're told we mustn't do. We must never discriminate. And that's this Kabbalistic idea of there being no opposites working its way into society. We mustn't discriminate between the races. We mustn't discriminate between the genders. That's this Kabbalistic idea. There is no good and evil, and evil is good and good is evil. And that's what you end up with. It's these ideas. Dr. E. Michael Jones was talking about it the other day. Neoplatonism. That's what it all boils down to, and that's worked its way through economics and through society. It's basically old magic but called new magic, Neoplatonism. Get rid of all discrimination.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it goes back to the Templars again. I mean, I believe one of the Templars, Demolay, was burnt at the stake. They came back from Jerusalem, taught about suddenly God's not God, the devil is God, and God is the bad guy, and saw the church obviously put up into this and at some point went to destroy the Templars. Some escaped to Scotland, but Demolay was burnt at the stake. And I believe when at some point in the French Revolution, when the heads of the Christian leadership there was being guillotined, the shouts of Demolay has been revenged was in the air. And of course, there's a Masonic Hall in America, which is for kids up to 12 to 18, I think it is, which kind of breaks them into Freemasonry proper. And that is called the Demolay Society, of which Bill Clinton used to be one.
Well, I think when that happened, when they rounded up the Templars, it looks like a lot of them escaped and managed to make their way over to Scotland. And you've got a Roslin Chapel there, and the Roslins and the Sinclairs, and all these families that were involved with the Templars, all this Templar symbolism. And then shortly after that, you get the birth of Freemasonry in Britain.
Yeah.
Freemasonry is what was used to export this revolution to France for the French Revolution. So it's entirely possible that was how this revet part. The reason why they were saying Demolay has been avenged, because this idea had been continuing from way back then, and that would have been why they rounded up these Templars. I mean, it's the same ideas, this revolutionary idea and taking over the state, taking over the people, and getting rid of all morals and all morality. And these Jews did this in Jerusalem when the Romans had Jerusalem surrounded before Vespasian and Titus. That's what these Jews were doing in there. They were dressing up as women. They were having sex with one another, sodomizing one another, robbing the people, starving the people, cutting the people up, torturing them, doing all the same things that we hear these Bolsheviks doing nearly 2,000 years later in Russia. These Jews were doing in Judea to the citizens of Judea.
And child sacrifices went on there as well.
Oh, yeah. That was really the start of it, child sacrifices. And they found them in North Africa. They found them just to the east of Jerusalem in the country next door. They found lots of evidence of this child sacrifice with the same people, Canaanite people, Jew people, and it carries on to this day with the very same people that are involved in this. And Freemasons are just their best buddies, aren't they?
Well, funny enough, there's a law, I think it's in France, possibly, where obviously, paedophilia is—they're trying to introduce it at some stage, and not so much a law, but a guiding lines. And it actually says at one point that the fathers don't show enough attention to the daughters' vaginas when the young girls. It would only enhance the relationship if they, showed more attention. Can you believe that one?
Well, they're constantly trying to promote sympathy for the pedophile and blame the child for seducing the pedophile. They've done that twice now, just on BBC soap operas. So I'm sure they're doing it in other programs as well, and subtly preparing the way for the legalization of pedophilia, exactly the same as they did with homosexuality.
They get there in the end, don't they?
Yeah, the more they push it, though, the more chance there is that we're going to rise up and push back. And that's obviously that's what's happening now with your documentaries and with this podcast, Dennis. We're coming near to the end of the podcast now. Do you want to let people know where they can find your stuff before we finish?
Yeah, well, I can't find it myself these days. YouTube's the best bet. There's one or two versions of Greatest Story Never Told up there as well. Good quality as well. You can go to the website, greatestorynevertold.tv, or you can catch me, Dennis Wise, at YouTube with the documentary Communism by the Back Door, and hopefully soon the first instalment of this new one, The Masonic Secret Victory.
Well, hopefully we've whetted the listeners' appetite for the new episode of your new series. Hopefully it'll be out by the end of the week so they can check it out for themselves. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place, at Radio Aryan. So thank you very much for coming on, Dennis. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And we hope you all have a wonderful weekend ahead of you.
To Radio Aryan.